Now, it's been almost 12 months of controversy, really, at the University of Wollongong and its setting up of the Ramsay Centre's degree in Western Civilization. And it's been back and forth and back and forth. And as I mentioned, there's really two parts to this argument. There is the legal one, which you heard talked about on the breakfast program this morning. And then there is the philosophical one. It is a philosophy degree, essentially, that these students are going to be taking part in. And Professor Dan Hutto is putting together the curriculum. And he's coming to our studio this morning to have a chat to us this morning. G'day, how are you going?
Good day. Thank you very much for having me on.
What is Western civilization?
Gosh, that's a good question. Actually, that's a good philosophical question and one that we actually tee up for the students right away. So it's actually been raised that there is no such thing as Western civilization. And sometimes that's thrown in with a joke, right? People say,
Wasn't that
Gandhi's
okay?
joke.
It was Gandhi's joke. What do you
Well,
think of Western civilization? He said
it'd be
it
nice
was a
if.
good idea.
It's probably not actually attributed to Gandhi, but the so we won't, we
You can
won't be
fact check that one for me, that's fine.
I'm not sure if that's right, but the question is a good one actually. Is the question is the West a construct like so many other things that that isn't in fact a very useful way of dividing the world up or even carving up our history, right? So that question is an academically live issue. Now, if you're talking to a philosopher, this kind of thing comes up with just about everything. So, is there some essence to what we pick out with our terms? In any case, like chairs and cats and dogs, like what unifies or brings them together? So we use probably lots of terms and lots of ways that don't pick out an essential item. So there's different uses of the notion of the West, and some are better or worse.
If it's a live issue and Western civilization could be considered just a construct, why
Why have a
put
degree
the
on it?
words Western civilization literally in concrete on the front of your building?
It's a live issue whether there's such a thing as philosophy or whether philosophy's dead. It's a live issue whether. So, I mean, it's in fact, that's the great part about asking deep questions is that that's a live issue for almost every topic. And it's a good issue to actually ask. In fact, I don't think the controversy that people make a lot of that has been a bad thing because it's made people more attentive to the kinds of concerns that we want. Like, what kind of relationship do we want between different traditions of thought? How do we want to have respectful connections to other traditions of thought? And that's actually been much more center stage in Australia because of this development, and not in a bad way. I mean, it's people are concerned now and protective in the right sorts of ways about how they're going to engage with other traditions respectfully. So I actually think, although we often think of the controversy as bad, actually, I think in a way we're paying attention to this issue in over the past 12 months, as you said, in a way that has some good effects.
I've developed a theory
Fair
about
enough.
this, and that is the name. Looking at your curriculum, looking at what you're actually doing, it looks quite compelling. But if only you'd called it, say, the Centre for Enlightenment,
Sure.
rather than the Centre for Western Civilization. We're in an era,
Yes.
2018, 2019, when this was proposed,
Certainly.
where there is kickbacks against the idea of Western civilization and hegemony. Did you not consider that when you took the job?
Actually, I did, but I only had control over one name, not the original name of the degree when we were bidding for it, right? That was kind of it was a bid, so we had to operate within the confines of that. But I've made this clear before, so the name that I chose was the name of the School of Liberal Arts, which I think is, I hope, anodyne and not offensive in any way.
So you could have called it a liberal arts degree, the Ramsay liberal arts degree. You could have called it. I don't think anyone would have any problem with calling it a Centre for Enlightenment, because that is an historical and philosophical movement where we looked at evidence.
Well, let me stress. So ours is interesting in this. I guess there's some features that I should bring out. Many programs around the world in philosophy, for example, just in my home subject, are by default just happen to predominantly study Western texts. That's just
Yeah, I got that. I don't think you'd have to change your
No, no, no,
curriculum.
no.
It just
Actually,
feels pig-headed to have gone ahead with the Western civilization part of it. And of course this would blow up.
Well, I was going to say that the interesting thing about ours is we have far more connections to non-Western traditions of thought. So one of the core ideas, you asked about the philosophy behind it, one of the things that I've been pushing in a way that's not just comparative is what I consider to be a kind of conversational philosophy. So conversational philosophy wants to bring other traditions in and see how much they overlap, how where they connect on particular topics. So for example, to take a couple just from the actual curriculum, we want to look at what both Aristotle and Confucius have to say about virtue ethics and how well their ideas stand up to contemporary critique. And one of the founding ideas in this degree is that we're always connecting it up to contemporary issues, but we're bringing figures who we I consider, as Wilfred Sellers put it, our dead contemporaries back to the table. So I have no prejudice against dead authors. I think they have just as much right to speak and they're important to hear from, but also that that little connection crossing traditions is unusual. And that's a real feature of the degree. It appears in half of the core subjects. That's far more, and they're core subjects, so they're not electives. That's far more than most degree programs do. So not only is the name the wrapper distracting, it belies, I think, one of its really core features, that this is committed to that program. In fact, I've been committed to that program since I've got to Wollongong. So people probably don't know, this might be real news. I was the one who created the Philosophy East and West course at Wollongong when I was there. So we had only one elective that was kind of do this in a smaller scale. It's never run. It's not attracted enough interest to run. We never get the numbers. So for 3 years, I haven't been able to get that up and running. It's now called World Philosophy. It's been retitled. It's got the same kind of ambition of a conversation between traditions, but one worry I have in the background is people are very, and I think it's a good thing that people are concerned about the issue, but obviously we want students to be more than just concerned. We actually want them to do the actual study of the material. So it's one thing to say you're interested in something. It's another thing to show up and actually sign up for the courses. And one of the nice design features of this is it's built into the structure of this throughout half the program, that kind of conversation is going to happen. And I think that's actually important. Come back to my point. The title of the degree wasn't my choice. But let me also make a comment. I don't think, for all that the title matters. I mean, I've said this before. It's what's under the hood.
I agree with you, but in one sense, but in the other, considering the kicking against it, and we'll get into what you're saying, the disinformation. It just seems crazy to me that was not considered, that there would be a backlash of the title.
It was,
and then people wouldn't look under the hood.
Sure, I understand. I understand it's an advertising point. Look, there is a predominance to look at text from the Western tradition. That's not abnormal. I think our program, actually, if you compare it to most, does far better, because most other programs put other traditions in.
I did philosophy at university, briefly, and there was no reference.
There's no connection to.
There was no reference to Eastern philosophy. We didn't do Confucianism. We didn't do Buddhism. It was all, basically from Greece onwards.
That's right.
From Socrates onwards and through to Bertrand Russell, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
It was totally Western.
Yeah.
And I'd imagine most philosophy departments are very similar.
Most philosophy departments are similar, and I'd say there's something else in the background that maybe your listeners don't know about. Maybe they don't, it's maybe too refined a concern, but the reality is that many programs now have lost touch with the history itself, because it's become more Anglophone, in fact, even not even just European. So we tend to do a kind of scientistic approach to deal with topics in philosophy, which means we're getting even less touch with the great works of the past. And that's actually something that was going on. People were saying, oh, you don't need this because you already do it. That's not really true at all. If you look back the years before, we were trying to make sure that they got in touch with some of the, people sometimes take issue with this word, but the classic material, or at least, really important text in our history, exemplary text. We would have called this, there was an argument in the New York Times that programs needed to if they weren't teaching, as you just described it, other courses, they should rename themselves. A very famous piece, degrees in Western philosophy, more or less, or an Anglo-American European philosophy, because that's their restricted diet. Ironically, we this thing does that, but it does far more, because unusually it doesn't just deal with the Western texts. So like in half the courses you're dealing in this more conversational dimension. I think that's how those programs should be developed anyway, right? So I think that's an important, like, you really don't understand, for them, give you a concrete case, you won't understand, we have one course on the rise of Western science. If you don't understand Islam's contributions to that, you don't understand how the West got its scientific beginnings.
Well, speaking of which, you know, you and I met face to face for the first time at the university's iftar dinner, which is the university in conjunction with the Muslim community, and you and your wife got up to say the thank you at the end. Is your wife a Muslim?
She is. She's a devout Muslim. So we've been married for, 30 years now, and I have had long and complicated and interesting engagements with the Muslim community ever since. I mean, I've been, that's been a regular feature.
I mean, I bring it up because it is, I think it's relevant to to you leading this course, but does that filter into the way you would construct it, for instance?
Absolutely. One things that my wife inspired was, and one of the things that made this, I think, the design of this degree quite different is, she is a big fan of the particular college. It's a Tuna College in the U.S. It's a liberal arts Muslim college. And so we often, so it's Ramadan at the moment, so we often have a lecture at 4 a.m. You know, I'm also fasting myself with her. So we would listen to a lecture from them, and they make constant connections the other way around to Western figures in the history of ideas, and Kant and Mill and Locke or whomever, whatever's on the topic of the day. And they have a very rich knowledge of these traditions and how they connect and how they disagree and where there's differences and where how they fit in the history of ideas. It's a really powerful model, and we've kind of done the reverse. Their emphasis is primarily on the Islamic texts, and then they make those connections. We've done it the other way around. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. By the way, I mean, I'll say this. I think, although I understand the sensitivities and I do get it, and I think there's quite a big difference between studying something and promoting it above others. That's a different model. I think in philosophy, that's a little hard to swallow because really, let me make a simple comparison, a more micro comparison. Kant and Aristotle, let's stay within that one tradition. They have very different views about ethics. When we investigate those philosophically, we find they're subtle, and it's very hard to decide between them. And it, you don't feel like you can come out of that with a winner, right? Nobody's walked away thinking this one is better than that. I mean, there are individuals who make the argument that this is superior than that for various reasons. But no sensitive critical thinker can come out of a course, when you've listened to all this, with an entire group of students come away thinking, oh, well, Kant certainly won that hands down, right? That's just not how this works. And Wittgenstein, one of my favorite philosophers, doesn't think there's any progress in philosophy. It just, and I'm not, I have no problem with that, right? It's just, we're not measuring.
Ideas expand rather than survival of the fittest.
That's the idea. And actually, the core of conversational philosophy is an expansion of our imaginative capacities. So actually, and this has been a big push in recent research in philosophy, is that our standard intuitions are Wittgenstein's favorite line on this and mine is, we suffer from a one-sided diet. If we have too limited a diet, we actually don't get this expansive reach. So far from some of the bad press, this thing has been aiming to really make those connections live.
Thank you so much for coming in. Appreciate it. It's Senior Professor Daniel Hutto from the University of Wollongong's Western Civilization degree. Thanks for coming in again.
Thanks, Nick.
9 o'clock. Time for the news.